morning and welcome to The Garden Show. I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
And we have so many things that we want to talk about this morning between now and 10 o'clock. Great time to be in the garden in between showers.
Yes, it's been a very kind of opportunistic sort of gardening season. It seems like, okay, it's not raining right now, run! Go out and harvest, go out and pull weeds, go out and trim, go out and deadhead. But yeah, so I've been like taking advantages of these little splurge of sunshine. Like yesterday morning was gorgeous, and then it fell apart. But I was out there in the morning.
Yeah, so this morning, of course, in Sitka, we've had intermittent, really heavy showers. But in between, I ran out and killed several slugs. And the good thing about this kind of weather is that you can find your slugs because they're not hiding as they do on a beautiful sunny day when you want to be in your garden. And trying to stay on top of your slugs right now will make a big difference. There's plenty of weather for them and not for us. So some targeted work at reducing the ones that are nibbling right now on what you're just waiting to harvest would be a great move.
And I want to put in a plug, speaking of kind of targeted work, I know a lot of us had problems again this year with our gooseberries and some of our currants with that gnarly imported sawfly. It wasn't imported on purpose, of course. It moved this way and took advantage. But if you saw a lot of like defoliation, so are the leaves really messed up on your gooseberries, on your black currants, things like that, you want to make sure that you clean up every last little bitty leaf that fell off of that plant. And so you're decreasing the amount of material for those sawflies to overwinter in. The easiest way for us, unless you want to spray a lot of chemicals, which I don't, is to use sanitation. You can use insecticidal soap if you actually see the critters, but at this point, we're on the sanitation cycle in terms of control.
It's always good to understand the life cycle of the organism, the pest that's after you, and try and figure out what it looks like. We talk about sawflies, and of course you're going to think, well, I'm not sure what the saw part is. Well, that's the piercing mouth parts in theory. But what a sawfly looks like is a little fly. And the part that's actually defoliating into your plant is the larvae, which looks like a caterpillar. Typically, we call a caterpillar the larvae of a moth or a butterfly. And so is a sawfly larvae a caterpillar? Well, colloquially, it is. That's what it looks like. It looks like a little green caterpillar. So that's what's damaging your plants, and it's getting in by a little mature. The mature insect is a fly, and its nursery is the leaf litter right underneath your plant. So yes, you need to clean all of those up, and covering them is not going to help because they're just going to crawl out. So you actually need to use either a rake or even a broom, believe it or not, or both, and then burn them. Trash or burn them. Your compost is not the place.
Yeah, no, I spent part of the sunny bit yesterday morning crawling underneath my currant bushes and kind of hand raking all the material up and then taking it down to my burn pile. I put a little diatomaceous earth on, which may have been effective for about 2 seconds because it started to rain. But I was like, oh, I'll just keep putting it on periodically and see what happens. But yeah, sanitation is the way to go. I have heard that there are a couple of more resistant black currants, and I should have remembered that name really fast, but I'll make sure I report that. But my regular black currants, I have berries from them, but man, they took a beating despite me trying to spray them really regularly with safer soap and water and whatever else. It was tough.
So the other thing to know is that, one, your berries are fine. This is not going to harm the berries. So pick and enjoy your currants or your gooseberries. And then the other thing is that your shrub may easily survive this on the short term. In other words, it'll probably come back next year looking just fine unless it has we have another terrible round of this. So your shrub is not necessarily dead, but it's certainly going to be diminished if this is a year after year thing for you.
Yeah, no, I think I kept it at bay enough that, you know, the leaves were functional enough for most of the year. But yeah, I eventually lost the battle. So I'm not giving up on these shrubs. I'm willing to battle for them because I really, really love blackcurrant jam. I might not make this effort for something that I didn't love quite as much, but oh my goodness. So yeah, it's worth the battle for me.
Yep, and those are always the choices. Well, we wanted to talk about several different sort of short topics today, but 747-5877 is the number if you'd like to call. If you have a question or something you're working on, or you want to share something that's working out really well for you. Saving seeds. This is definitely a time of year to think about saving seeds from plants and saving yourself the money of repeat purchase and also having knowing exactly what you have.
Right. So there's first you have to know a little bit about the type of plant that you're working with and the seeds. So how the seeds are produced and whether or not it's a stable hybrid. And by stable hybrid, usually those are labeled as open pollinated so that those characteristics just come through. And I say hybrid because reality is most things probably are a hybrid at some point, but often what we could really think of those are is true breeding, open pollinated or self-pollinating varieties. And those are the easiest to save seeds from and actually know pretty much what you're going to get back in the end. So the next generation will look like this generation. It's not that you can't save seeds from hybrids. In fact, I'd read a really interesting article about kind of some of the advantages in saving seeds from hybrids, in that you get some diversity, but know that not all of those plants, and depending on the complexity of the hybrid, maybe very few of those plants will look like that original, but you'll get some interesting things. So it's not that you can't do it.
Right. So you can save seeds from your vegetables. Of course, you have to let them go to seed. Some are easier than others. And a lot of our vegetables we eat rather than let them go to seed. And that's fine. Many of the root crops that we grow don't have terribly viable seeds. And some cases they are a biennial. That's the word, a biennial. And they're not going to produce seeds. So I have a carrot going to seed in my garden that lived all the way through last winter and this season, and it's going to seed. And I'm going to try and save those carrot seeds and see what happens. And that's intentional on my part. You certainly don't want all your carrots to go to seed because you want to eat your carrots. But know that if it's a biennial, it's going to take you two growing seasons to get to the seeds.
So your easy targets are things that are annuals, right? So seed to seed in 1 year, open pollinated or self-pollinated, stable, you know, breeding characteristics. And actually then the next easiest criteria to look for is that their fruit are dry at maturity. And they'll still be wet in the rain, but whatever. But so you're not talking about like a soft fruit, like a tomato or a cucumber. So dry fruit, maybe a good example that you're familiar with are some of the columbines. You see those little capsules, kale, or probably the carrots actually are good examples of that.
If you want to try some easy ones, as Kitty said, you know, start with the easy ones. Columbines are so productive in seeds, and they're really easy because they hold their little seed pods up, they dry them, open them, and just wait for you to spill them into an envelope. And I use a regular letter-style envelope for saving seeds. It works out best for me. It's not watertight, and that's helpful because a watertight seed a seed environment promotes mold unless you know that your seed is absolutely dry. So columbine is a good one. Blue poppies, good one. I've had very good luck saving seed on blue poppies, and they tend to be sort of the holy grail for a lot of people. So that's a good one. And then the other poppies as well. Those are all easy ones.
Yeah, one of the things I like to do when I cut, so I'll wait until it looks like the seed pods are mature, but it's kind of this careful dance, because if you wait too long, then the capsules open up and the seeds go flying everywhere, right? So you have to kind of watch them, and then I'll cut the stems and I'll tie them together usually, but I'll put the head part, the fruit part, in a paper bag and hang them. And let them dry.
All All right, we have a caller. Hello.
Hi there. Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Delighted.
So I was talking to Becky while you guys were still talking, so I'm so sorry if you just answered my question. But my situation is that every year I have one box that just kind of volunteers every single year. And it's just a great blend of mustard greens and kale and chard. So now these guys have all gone to seed. I've got the little pods. And I'm just wondering, it's just been so nice to be lazy gardener, and just they just come up magically every year because I just let the pods go into the dirt. But this year, I wanted like use the dirt now. I don't want to wait and just dig that all up and have it be a big dirt box. So I'm wondering, what do you guys think if I just dug those pods that are hanging around, dug them back into the dirt, and then went ahead and just to see if they might pop back up already this year? You think any chance with mustard greens and kale and chard?
Oh, now I get what you're saying. I was like, oh, she wants to plant something different in her box, but you actually want to know if you just shake those back in, if they will germinate.
Yeah, do you think?
I'm going to have to think about that. They might. The reason why I say I have to think about it is sometimes seeds need a cold bit. In order to think that it's time to go. And I don't know specifically if those species do. That's my only bit of hesitation. You could try a few of them. You could save the pods like in a paper bag or a paper envelope once they're dry so you can reseed them. But you could try a few and see what happens. You don't have much to lose.
Yeah. Okay, well, I might gather them like you guys are saying to gather them up. I've just never done that before. I've always been the lazy one, like, hey, they'll come up next year.
It is great taking advantage of the things that just self-seed and come up next year. And, of course, our kales are classic for that. Kales are just really fantastic at that. One of the problems for the chard, I would say, is that chard's a little slower. So I don't know, whether you'll get a chard harvest, you can obviously eat them when they're tiny, so it doesn't matter. But I'd love for you to do it and let us know what happens. And then you can always clip your seeds and, as we say, just save them and then have those ready to go for a different spot even.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and I'm not sure if it was you guys or not, but I love, like I have bok choy that will just kind of sporadically come up through my beds, and the slugs go to them. And that is such a great way to, have a slug magnet that's not eating all my good stuff. It just eats the bok choy, which I like. But, it's just kind of a nice thing. So that was another hot tip you guys gave me. So thank you for telling me that years ago. Because those slugs, really, they love bok choy.
They do. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
You guys are the best.
It's funny
Thanks
to
so
think
much.
Of bok choy being grown as a trap instead of as food. But I'm giggling. I'm enjoying it.
It's true. It totally is the thing. All right, Cindy B., so great to hear you. What's going best in your garden this year?
Oh, my gosh. This year I got smart, and I'm actually staging my lettuces. I feel like such an adult. So I'm going to have lettuces the whole time, and my lettuces are beautiful. So I'm really jumping up and down about the lettuces this year.
Fantastic. That's great.
All right.
Thanks so much for your call.
Take care, you guys. Thanks so much for your wisdom. Toodles.
Bye.
Right. It is kind of fun. I actually have a number of things in my garden that I don't deliberately save seeds from, but I just let them do what they do, and then I'll cull them where I don't want them to grow and keep them. I mean, one of them is foxglove, to be honest with you. I love foxgloves, but I have to thin them out. They certainly don't need me to save their darn seeds. They're everywhere.
Yeah, each foxglove that has a good handful of flowers produces, I am not kidding, a million seeds. So if you like growing foxglove, it's wise to cut those before they actually open the pods and either burn them or put them in the trash, frankly, because there are so many seeds. And if you are cultivating a beautiful bed or a beautiful lawn, they'll happily oblige.
The cool thing about them, and so I've been kind of saving the ones I like more, or that is letting them go to seed. So there's some variety in foxglove. So I'll let the ones go to seed that I like the flowers and I like the shape, and I will cut down the ones, don't let them go to seed. So I'm kind of doing my own very, very old school last 10,000 years sort of seed saving and variety selection.
Nice. Very nice. Yeah. So let's see. The other thing that's easy to save seeds from are nasturtiums. They're really big. They work well. They're easy to replant. And they don't tend to survive our winters very well. In other places, nasturtium seeds just go whatever, and then they germinate the next year. But here in Sitka, at least, that's not real common. Our winter usually kills the seed throughout the, you know, and so it's not going to self-seed. But you can totally put them in an envelope and have many for the next season and plant them out, and they do really well. The other one is calendulas. Calendulas both self-seed and you can save the seed, and they have big seed. That's always a nice way to go when the seed itself is pretty big. So calendulas are good that way.
Super nice. So what was I? The thing I wanted to mention was we've mostly been talking about things that have dry fruit, so mostly capsules or like poppies, those kind of cool little shaker things they have. The soft fruit seeds are a little bit fussier, mostly because usually when we want to eat those fruits, and I'm thinking like a tomato or a cucumber, those seeds aren't ripe yet. So if you want to save tomato seeds, or cucumber seeds, and you got to know that your cucumber seeds are actually something that is producing a viable seed, there's some other steps. And I think we have a phone call. Maybe.
I missed him. Let's see. Let me try again. Hello. Are you there? Nope. So it was Susan calling about raspberry issues. And Susan, feel free to call back. We'd like to know specifically. I think I hit the button just a little bit too soon. We are looking through a window to make sure we do our technology right. Just a little bit behind the curtain there for you. So call back and we'll try again. But Kitty, you're talking about soft fruits. And we had one success this year in saving soft fruit seeds. The tomatillo-like plant, it's suddenly flying out of my head, what ground cherry. And a friend had given us some ground cherries, and so we saved them over and did manage to grow them from seed. Okay, our caller is coming back.
Darn, yeah, waiting with bated, crossing fingers.
I don't know why it cannot capture this. Maybe, maybe when she calls, you can get the question, Becky. And we'll try this again.
So did you have to let the tomatillo seeds ferment, or how did you process them?
Well, that's the interesting thing, is they just laid there and dried all winter. And then they just slowly shriveled until they had they had the fruit of the tomatillo type fruit around them. And then you kind of try and wash that off and then go ahead and plant them out. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. I noticed that I think some of our soft fruits don't produce viable seeds. So maybe it's better just to keep buying those. I haven't really tried. I really only grow one kind of zucchini successfully, I would say. And I haven't tried to save seeds from it yet. And my favorite tomatoes are hybrids. So I let the seed company actually cull through those, and then I get the ones I want. I have a limited amount of space for tomatoes, so I want them to do what I want them to do.
Right. It would be great to hear what seeds you save and what your tips are. So if you think of that and you want to let us know, even if it's not during the show today, that would be great. We had one other topic we wanted to get to, and we've only got a little bit of time left. We would still take your call, but we wanted to talk a little bit about cutting flowers and bringing them in. So some tips and tricks, what to cut and how to do it.
So, yes, I actually was just getting a question in on my phone for the garden show. I'm going to relay that question, and then I'll go back to that one. So the kind of zucchini I grow successfully is actually Cavilli. It's a kind of a light green sort of zucchini, and that's just been glorious for me. That's been my most reliable one.
Hello, have we got you on the garden show?
Yes.
Thanks so much for your persistence.
Yeah, no problem. So thank you for taking my call. We have an area where we've successfully grown raspberries for a long time, and a couple of years ago we cut them back maybe too much. The year after, or well, that season they did okay. The following season they all died, every single one of them. And so then this spring we transplanted a bunch of raspberries into that area. They seemed to be okay at first, and now they're withering. Their leaves are brown and yellow, and they did produce a few berries. There's some berries on there, but they're really not looking good. And so I'm wondering, first of all, could there be something going on in the soil there, and or should we add to it, or something else we should be aware of?
Well, this is a tough one because probably what's happening is that you have a disease that affects raspberries in the area where you've grown them for a long time. And I would say the best bet is you have to find a new spot.
Okay. Yeah. With a quick look, it looks like there is a verticillium, which is a type of fungus that's soil-borne. That could be what's affected your raspberries. And, yeah, you won't be able to grow raspberries there for a while. Okay. So don't try. don't waste your money and plants on that. I can do a little looking. It's hard to say exactly what killed your raspberries without, you know, looking at actually at the stems, looking at a little more information. But I wouldn't keep trying to grow them in the same spot.
Okay. Thank you for your help.
Yeah, you're so welcome. Yeah, it's disappointing. I've grown raspberries successfully similarly in the very same spot, and mine are now starting to die back. So I know I have to find a new spot. And you know, we've said this before, and it bears repeating, the salmon berries are very related to raspberries, so they're a great host for similar diseases. And, yeah, there could be several different ones that are involved here.
Okay.
Yeah, right. And raspberries need some good drainage. I mean, they don't have to have the driest spot in the world, but anytime there's they kind of have poor drainage or they don't get good light, that does weaken the plant and make them more susceptible to some of these fungi. But yeah, anytime you have a monoculture of something, you can build up pathogens. Doesn't matter what it is.
Okay.
And probably all right. Not anything you did intentionally or wrong or anything like that. Just the luck of the draw.
All right. Thank you for your help.
You're welcome. Well, we had somebody else call and couldn't get through, so if you want to try, we still have time to take another call, 747-5877. Kitty, you answered your squash caller, correct?
Yes, that was the Cavilli squash. I build kind of a little, let's call it a makeshift shelter for my squash, and those do super well. It's been productive this year, and this year is a good test for things because it's not been warm. Well, maybe it's been warm, but it's been really wet, and it's still doing just fine and being super productive. So I think that's a good recommendation.
Right. Great. So we have probably a call coming in, and if we don't get to talking as much about our cut flowers, we can certainly bump that to our next show. My tip for you is bring a few in and enjoy them. With the rainy weather, you may not be in your garden as much as you would like, and some of them can be quite long-lasting in a vase, and that makes it really nice.
Right. So when I am definitely in the school of take a bucket of water or a big vase of water out into the garden with you with your scissors and just, you know, cut them and plop them in and then let them sit in that water in a cool spot, you know, maybe on your porch or something like that for a while before you bring them all the way in. You definitely want to remove any leaves that are down in the water once you're putting them into the vase. Make sure this you can recut some of the stems. But one of the things I wanted to share, unless there's that call is coming in.
Well, the caller is in, but we may be just getting the message and we may not talk to the person. So go ahead for another moment.
Okay. One of the things I was going to say, and I waxed on about this before, was the dahlias that grew from seed this year that are flowering. I am so thrilled with them, and they make the best cut flowers too. So
So our caller sent the message through but didn't want to talk live on the air. And so the question is, how do you get rid of salmon berries?
I don't have a magic answer other than my clippers, my shovel, my I just keep at them. There's not a magic cure that I know of. I mean, someone suggested trying vinegar and all that sort of stuff and putting bleach on the cut stems, and it's a labor. Sorry.
Yeah, that's the same. It's just persistence and the hard work. I would say, you know, in the past, people have recommended various herbicides. But frankly, in a fish environment here, I can't in good conscience recommend to you any herbicides. So just clipping them back and digging them out is your best bet. But thanks for your question.
Oh, sorry, Marley. Yeah. If you have a big area of them and you want to get rid of them, let's say you have a raspberry thing, I mean, not a raspberry, a salmon berry patch going on that you want to remove and plant something else in, you can hack them all back, and then you could cover that with, you know, a tarp or whatever, dark tarp, and see if you can, that will slowly kill them back, and they will start coming out the edges, and you can more quickly control them. That's a longer term process, but might be worth trying.
All right, so we're getting a question about seeds, blue poppies and columbines, and can they overwinter in the ground? Yes, both the poppies and the columbines will overwinter in the ground here and come up again next year, but you can save them and winter them over in an envelope in your house and plant them out again. So both strategies work in our climate.
Right. No, it's super handy if you want to control where those poppies are going to grow or control where the columbines are going to grow. Yes, cut them and save them in an envelope. If you're like, whatever, go wherever you want, it's just a strategy I have to admit that I use a little bit. Just let them go and they will take care of themselves.
Right. My blue poppies love to come up in my garden beds and in my vegetable beds and also under my rhododendrons. Those seem to be the preferred locations for self-seeding and repropagating. But I've also done fine with saving the seed and trying it in specific places. They're harder to get started in pots for some reason. I think that's more difficult. And columbines are pretty easy no matter what you do.
Right. Columbines are pretty fun. I actually need to bring in a few more varieties into my yard. I know we've talked about this before, but columbines will hybridize with each other to beat the band. You know, basically, if they're flowering at the same time, pollinators move that pollen around, and they very successfully hybridize and form some great colors. So I recommend you just kind of have a few different kinds of columbines if you're open to garden whimsy, nature whimsy, I guess, and just let them go and see what you get.
The other thing that's nice about letting them go is that columbines are multi-season perennials. They're listed as perennials, but they're actually not terribly long-lived in our climate. And after a while, you know, a plant that looks and has been robust sort of seems to just like not do well and struggle along. And so it's worth just pulling those out and having a few that are coming from seed and encouraging them. At least that's how it goes in my garden.
Yeah, I do the same thing. And every once in a while, I've noticed that some of them have kind of a deformation, it looks like a viral-induced flower deformation. And what I do with those is I dig that whole plant out and I put it in the burn pile. It's like, sorry. Calling in the garden is kind of a tough process, but it's the only way to keep things under control, short of drug violence.
Yeah, especially during this very rainy season, anything that starts to look like it's not doing well, you're going to save yourself a lot of heartache from other plants by sacrificing that one and getting it in the burn pile. It's the same with staying cleaning up on lower leaves that are dying off and molding at this time. So take those away from particularly potted plants and things that are subject to mold in your garden. Take those out and make sure there's more air and fewer of the spores and and whatnot of all of these molds that are trying to take over.
Yeah, I regularly go through the tomatoes in the greenhouse, which are packed a little bit tighter than optimal. And any of the leaves that are mostly yellow and obviously not, you know, photosynthesizing anymore, I just trim away and get rid of. And actually, I am really conservative with my tomato leaves. I don't put those in the compost either. I put them in my burn pile. I'm a little paranoid, but I have a pathology background. So what can I say?
Right. And if you don't have a burn pile, then you know, into the trash, and that doesn't mean the compost. So you're really just looking for that to go away from your environment altogether.
Yep. Yeah. Compost is nice. Actually, this is the time of year I was just thinking when I was pulling weeds, is that anything that I had missed and had gone to seed, I also don't put that in my compost. So my burn pile gets kind of wild looking right now. And yes, I'm lucky enough I have one. But if you let a weed go to seed, you don't want to put it in your compost. You're just giving that weed a lovely place to grow and get a head start, unless you're a very dedicated composter and get your compost hot enough.
So thanks so much for your calls today. We love talking with you and hearing what's going on and your questions. We'll be back next week, more than likely, and we can talk a little bit more about cut flowers. So for The Garden Show, I'm Molly Kabler.
And I'm Kitty LaBounty.
This is KCAW Sitka.
KCAW Sitka.